I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Welcome to Radio Times. Yesterday, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi announced an impeachment inquiry into President Trump. The last straw for her appears to have been the allegation that President Trump pressured President Zelensky of Ukraine during a phone call this summer to investigate Vice President Joe Biden and his son Hunter, who had sat on the board of a Ukrainian gas company, Burisma Holdings. Trump called Biden corrupt, even though neither the vice president nor his son had been accused of a crime. Now, President Trump announced yesterday that he has authorized the release of the transcript of his conversation with the Ukrainian president today. It has just been published. We will be talking about it a bit later in the hour. The whistleblower who set all this into motion has said he or she wants to speak to the House Intelligence Committee. The acting director of National Intelligence, Joseph McGuire, who is withholding the whistleblower's report, is testifying before the House Intelligence Committee tomorrow. And the Senate voted yesterday unanimously to release the whistleblower's report. A busy few days, time for some fact-checking. We asked Lewis Jacobson to join us. He's a senior correspondent for PolitiFact, joining us from NPR in Washington, D.C. And Lou Jacobson, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you so much.
You know, I'm so tempted to talk about this transcript, which is sitting right here. But
which I have not seen yet.
Which you have not seen yet. And I just can see some headlines there. So I'm going to put that on hold. And we have a guest who will tackle that with us later in the hour. I want to start with Hunter Biden. It's 2014. He is put on the board of this Burisma Holdings. This is May of 2014. What was his responsibility and why did he get this job?
Well, you know, I'm not exactly sure what specifically he did for the company. When the company hired him, they said that he was hired to help with transparency, corporate governance and responsibility, and international expansion, which are pretty vague terms.
Right.
So it's not exactly clear what exactly he did. It's not uncommon for people who are experienced or have connections to the U.S. government to be hired by foreign companies. It's got to be disclosed and all that.
Yeah.
And this was not a secret hire. In fact, the White House in May 2014 at a press briefing got asked about it, and the New York Times had an article about it about a year and a half later. So it was not a secret sort of hire, but it was definitely known at the time.
Were there questions about conflict of interest? Because we should say in 2014, Moscow invades Ukraine, annexes Crimea, and the vice president really becomes the point person for the Obama administration.
Correct. So when we started looking at this question earlier this year in the spring, we showed a lot of the evidence that we'd found to experts in foreign policy, particularly Ukraine and that part of the world. There was general agreement that that basically neither the vice president or his son had broken any kind of laws. There actually was a bit of consensus, though, that that his son had put his father into kind of a conflict of interest or an appearance of conflict of interest situation, because Biden, the vice president, was kind of the point person on foreign policy concerning Ukraine. His paid position, you know, with the company could at least present the the appearance of a conflict of interest. So it was probably not a wise decision for him to do that. That said, the allegation which the president and his camp has made concerning Joe Biden changing policy, trying to get the country of Ukraine to fire its prosecutor in order to protect the company his son was tied to, doesn't really fly. The reason for that is that the entire Western world leadership agreed that the old prosecutor was totally ineffective and should go. And so it was not just Joe Biden freelancing on his own to protect his kid. the entire U.S., Europe, and allies all agreed on the same policy, and that is why it was done. It's a much simpler and persuasive explanation of why that prosecutor was fired.
And that prosecutor was Viktor Shokin, correct?
Correct.
And his job, I guess, essentially was as a prosecutor is to look into corruption or misdeeds in Ukraine. What has he said about all of this?
So he has said that, sort of supporting the president's position, that there was an investigation going on at the time that he was fired. But another senior person in that office who then quit later because of concerns about corruption or lack of diligence fighting corruption in the office, he definitely disputed. excuse me. He had disputed that. So we're getting at least mixed signals on that. I think most people who are regional experts trust the one who said that there was no investigation going on, that it was dormant.
And this is this guy Lutsenko, correct?
I believe that's his name, yes.
And he said, I'm just reading from the various articles I've been reading over the last 24
yes,
hours,
there are lots
that
of them.
The gas company was not under investigation when Biden intervened. And Vice President Biden at the time, you know, threatened to withhold $1 billion from Ukraine if they didn't get rid of this Viktor Shokin. But this Lutsenko, who took Shokin's place, found that there was no evidence of wrongdoing.
Correct.
So let's, I think that takes care of the
It's
past.
A complicated story.
It is a complicated story, but it's an important one because this is what the president is really hanging these charges of corruption on. So let's fast forward to this past summer. Trump calls the newly elected President Zelensky in July 2015. Now, interestingly, this is the day after Mueller testifies before Congress.
Exactly. Very, very interesting timing.
It sure is. What do we know at this point about that conversation? And I mean, I have right here kind of a breakdown, but from your
Well,
reading.
I think it'll be explained better in that document, which, again, I haven't seen, but I can kind of explain a little bit. So that call is certainly a focus it appears to be because the actual whistleblower complaint is not fully public yet. But from what has been reported about it, it sounds like the phone call is part of the complaint filed by the whistleblower, but is not the entire complaint. It seems to indicate that there was a pattern or at least several instances of concern. So we are getting part of the information now, and that's more than we had yesterday, but there should be more to come out if the whistleblower complaint does become public, as is being speculated now, possibly as soon as tomorrow.
And I don't want to be coy here, and I'm just going to quote some headlines from BuzzFeed because I'm holding on to it. Trump directly asked another foreign leader to investigate a political rival. Trump also asked the Ukrainian president to help attack the Mueller investigation. Trump repeatedly talked about involving his personal lawyer, Rudy Giuliani. Zelensky name-dropped Trump's business. Again, I'm just quoting from BuzzFeed. The two presidents repeatedly talked business as Trump asked Zelensky to do him favors. So I just feel like I owe that to our listeners, and we will pick up from there.
Sure.
Lou, do we know anything about the whistleblower?
No, we don't, actually. We might soon, but as of now, we don't. You know, there is privacy in these cases, certainly at this very early stage. The president has accused him of being essentially a partisan hack, and either he is making that up, if he doesn't know the identity, or if he does know it, then you know, we'll see if that's true in the days ahead.
Now, the whistleblower, whoever he or she is, wrote up a report. It was given to Michael Atkinson, the inspector general, who was appointed by President Trump, and he called this of urgent concern. Can you translate that for us?
Yeah. Basically, it means that it has to be acted upon. The law says that Congress should get that sort of document, and apparently the White House was preventing the acting DNI, Director of National Intelligence, from turning that over. And that was really one of the key irritants in sort of prompting why we're seeing now the impeachment push.
And my, again, my reading of how this is supposed to work, which is it goes to the inspector general, and I guess the acting director of national intelligence gets to look at it. But within a certain number of days, it then is supposed to go to the specific committee or committees in the U.S. Congress, correct?
Correct. And that would be, seen and reviewed in private. It's a confidential document, so it would not necessarily be made public. I believe that the Senate resolution yesterday that passed about getting that document, I'm not clear that it actually guarantees it'll become public. I think the sort of momentum will probably make that so, but it's supposed to be reviewed by the intelligence committees first, and we'll see where it goes from there.
Here's a Facebook comment from Charlene. As usual, Trump is changing the subject. It's not about one call. It's about the whistleblower complaint, which should have been delivered to Congress by law. The White House and Justice Department have no right to keep the complaint from Congress. Now, yesterday, Lou, as of Nancy Pelosi's announcement of this impeachment inquiry into President Trump, what does that trigger?
So that's a good question, because in some ways it's significant, in some ways it's a little bit of status quo. They are now putting a name to it. It is kind of an official, impeachment inquiry. Does it necessarily change much on the ground? The committees that have been trying to look into these questions will continue their work. They will have a bit more formal nature backing them up. And there's some speculation by legal scholars that this could help the Democrats in the House in some of their legal battles. The big challenge they've faced, or certainly a big challenge, is that the White House has really tamped down on anybody sort of cooperating with these investigations, blocking people from trying to testify before Congress, even if they're subpoenaed. So the Democrats in the House have been pursuing or trying to pursue these sorts of cases in court. And the fact that they now have an official kind of named impeachment inquiry may be helpful in terms of making stronger legal arguments about why they need to get people to come testify before Congress, and may sort of unofficially convince judges to kind of put this on a faster track, because there is a time element, obviously. The 2020 election is coming up in just over a year, and so there certainly is a time pressure on this.
Lou, we're going to take a very short break. I have just a couple of more questions for you, and then we've got our second guest waiting in the wings. That's Louis Jacobson. He's senior correspondent for PolitiFact, and we are talking about the allegations against President Trump withholding aid money to Ukraine in exchange for dirt on his political rival, Joe Biden, and his son. And we're going to take a short break and talk some more. Lines open at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. We'll be talking also about what's in the transcript of the conversation Trump had with Ukrainian president. We'll be right back. I'm Marty Moskow.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
And you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. And we are talking about a lot of news that just got dumped in our lap. Lou Jacobson staying with us for the next couple of minutes. Again, senior correspondent for PolitiFact. Lou, I didn't ask you about the money. This is aid that Congress approved to go to Ukraine, essentially to fight against the Russians. What do we know about when that money was withheld and for what reason? And this is, of course, talking about the president.
Yeah, well, it was passed by Congress. It was supposed to go. And it it took months for it to actually be delivered, and was apparently, according to the news reporting we've been seeing in the past few days, definitely noticed that it was late. It's important because it could be seen as the president leveraging, something of value to the folks in Ukraine to try to get them to do something on his behalf. So, we will learn more about exactly what went on behind the scenes in terms of holding up the money. That could definitely be a key part of the future discussions, for sure.
Now, originally, the president said he held up the aid because of what he called corruption. And then I believe it was yesterday, he said because Europe wasn't paying its fair share. I'm quoting your competitor, the Washington Post fact-checkers,
yes.
Though,
right.
Looked at this, and he said, as a matter of fact, European countries have paid more than the United States in support of Ukraine.
Yeah, and actually, we've got a fact check on that coming out, too, which I haven't seen yet. That should be out shortly. But yeah, that does track with what I've seen, that if you look at particularly military aid, we do pay more than a lot of the countries in Europe do. But in terms of kind of soft power, they call it, certainly Europe has been quite generous. In fact, even more so than the U.S., has been.
Sure.
So yeah.
Lou, anything else that I forgot to ask you, Lou, before we say goodbye to you?
I think we covered a lot of it. No, I think we're in good shape. We will definitely learn more in the coming days, and this and the whole interview will probably be like totally out of date within
nothing like live radio, right? When
exactly.
There's a lot of breaking news. But I appreciate you joining us on Radio Times, Lou. Thanks so much.
Okay, thanks so much.
And that's Louis Jacobson, and he's senior correspondent for PolitiFact. I'm Marty Moscowen, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia.
For the past several months, we have been investigating in our committees and litigating in the courts so the House can gather all the relevant facts and consider whether to exercise its full Article I powers, including a constitutional power of the utmost gravity, approval of articles of impeachment. And this week, the president has admitted to asking the president of Ukraine to take actions which would benefit him politically. The actions of the Trump presidency revealed the dishonorable fact of the president's betrayal of his oath of office, betrayal of our national security, and betrayal of the integrity of our elections. Therefore, today, I'm announcing the House of Representatives moving forward with an official impeachment inquiry. I'm directing our six committees to proceed with their investigations under that umbrella of impeachment inquiry.
That was House Speaker Nancy Pelosi yesterday announcing the fourth time in our nation's history that the House of Representatives has launched an impeachment investigation into a president. Two presidents have been impeached, Andrew Johnson and Bill Clinton, and none have been removed from office. It's a high bar determining what amounts to high crimes and misdemeanors. We asked Craig Green to join us once again on Radio Times. He's a professor of law at Temple University's Beasley School of Law. He worked for the Department of Justice from 2001 to 2004. Craig Green, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me. I love the show.
Thank you so much. And while I was talking to our guests, you were madly reading through transcript released by the White House. This is the transcript of the conversation that President Trump had with the president of Ukraine. I've been glancing at some of the headlines, but I haven't had a chance to read it. What is your kind of major takeaway?
Sure. I mean, I think there are not a lot of surprises. This is not actually technically a transcript, but a summary. But I think there's one paragraph where President Trump says, "We do a lot for Ukraine. The United States has been very, very good to Ukraine." The next comment by the president is criticizing Robert Mueller and encouraging whatever you can do, it's very important that you do it if that's possible. And then the next paragraph speaks directly about Joe Biden and Biden's son talking about this false allegation that Biden was singularly responsible for removing the prosecutor general Shokin because he was somehow light on Biden's son or investigating Biden's son. And I think that's false. That's false. Exactly. All that's false. But I think in some ways, like, I think the most important thing is what you introduced is this is such an extremely serious matter and extremely uncertain at the same time. And nobody knows quite where it's headed. But I think today really is the start of the beginning. And I think this has really big consequences for 2020 and beyond. There's the one theory, which is that Trump asked Ukraine for electoral assistance. And then the other theory, even more damaging, is the possibility that he used millions, hundreds of millions of dollars of taxpayer money to influence the Ukraine. I think the first theory, the simpler theory, is almost already proved. I think that's really evidenced by the transcript. Rudy Giuliani and Trump have both denied it and admitted it. And the claim about the money, I think, is going to prompt enormous amounts of investigations by Nancy Pelosi. These are the kinds of things that one could expect an impeachment inquiry to get into.
When we talk about impeachment, it's been described as something, it's political, it's not criminal, it's about abuse of power, not necessarily a criminal act, which it seems like that's what Mueller was looking into. And there's the DOJ or the White House memo basically saying you can't indict a sitting president. So we are in different legal territory, correct?
That's exactly right. I think that there's no close similarity to criminal charges in terms of the burden of proof or in terms of having a judge or a jury. Looking back at history, no reason to look all the way back, but Andrew Johnson actually was, one of his articles of impeachment was for saying mean things about Congress. You can hardly imagine that was deemed in that time, in that political environment, to count as one of the high crimes and misdemeanors. The things that we're talking about with Trump are so much more serious than any other thing that's been alleged. I think with respect to just the simple theory of asking Ukraine for assistance, that violates election laws, which require prohibit soliciting, accepting, or receiving aid from a foreign national. It's an abuse of power and public trust because, of course, Donald Trump wasn't on the phone as a businessman. He was on the phone as the president. So he's using his office for this political person. It threatens American democracy and national security. And even the simpler theory, putting aside all the money, even the simpler theory is very, very serious. Certainly meets the constitutional threshold if it were shown.
It seems to me, and I don't know whether this is true or not, but I can't imagine the president talking to another head of state without people listening into a conversation.
No, I think that's right. And I, like everyone else, I've been learning a lot about this recently. And they used to keep tapes of these conversations, and they stopped after Nixon. And so this transcript that we have is now the substitute for keeping tapes of phone calls and conversations, really derivative directly out of Watergate concerns.
Huh.
So I think the thing that we really need, and you mentioned this earlier too, I think the next big step in public knowledge is the whistleblower's complaint. And the Trump administration has said that that will be released to Congress. I think if it's released to Congress, it will almost certainly eventually become public. But the thing that's different about the whistleblower's complaint is it makes the connections. There is a member of the National Security Administration, and then the inspector general found it to be credible and urgent.
Urgent so concern.
Exactly, and credible also. So both credible and urgent. Those are people who have every reason to be concerned not just about elections violations, but rather about national security and the possibility of foreign influence and misusing American taxpayer dollars. That's the kind of thing that one could expect the intelligence community to be worried about.
You mentioned Andrew Johnson, and one of the impeachment articles against him was insulting Congress. Talking more about Bill Clinton, which is in a much closer history, it was really about lying about sex.
Correct. Grand jury testimony that was prompted by Ken Starr's investigation. Of course, if Bob Mueller had been able to bring Donald Trump in front of a grand jury, who knows what would have happened. But those sorts of allegations against Bill Clinton were obstruction of justice and perjury. And those sorts of things have already been discussed at great length in the Mueller report. I think that one can expect those types of allegations to surface again if impeachment actually moves towards articles of impeachment. But the news story really is this one about Ukraine, which I think has caught a special public nerve, if you want.
Well, let's walk through it. As I said, this doesn't happen every day. So impeachment is not removal. It's really about getting the facts. And based on what Nancy Pelosi said yesterday, that there will be these six committees that are looking into various, pieces of these allegations. Then it gets tossed back to the judiciary. They draw up whatever articles of impeachment. They vote on them. If it's voted out of the committee, then the full House votes. Mm-hmm. And then what happens?
Well, I think the procedures are debatable within – it's all within Congress. Mm-hmm. So the investigations, which were the ones you were mentioning, are ongoing, and this will be some extra focus or oomph in terms of getting subpoenas or obtaining documents or compelling witnesses. One of the other precipitating facts for this was that the Director of National Intelligence refused a House subpoena. and tried to block the investigation. So those kinds of things are one. And then one of the committees, probably the Judiciary Committee, but it could be another committee, will, if they come that far, would draft articles of impeachment, and then the whole House would vote on those. In a way, all of that procedure around impeachment in the House would, if it goes forward, if they vote, even if they voted to impeach the president, then it would go to the Senate, where everyone knows there would not be a conviction. And so that's why I think, in a sense, it's important for everyone to understand, as you mentioned before, that this impeachment is really a process, and the ultimate outcome is not going to be removal. Of course, there never has been.
I was going to say, we've never removed a president.
Correct, correct, and never will be here. And there aren't smoking gun tapes as there were in the Nixon case, and there isn't a dress as there was in the Clinton case. But nevertheless, I think this investigation carries forward to the most important event. Of course, all of the other presidents were never stood for re-election.
That's
so this president, this is really all about the integrity of the presidency approaching 405 days away from the elections of 2020. And it means it has a political valence, but it doesn't mean that it's not a sincere investigation. Because I think you were mentioning, and I want to be clear for the listeners, this is very serious stuff that's being alleged, and regardless of whether it produced articles of impeachment or a conviction or any removal from office, I think there really needs to be a new American obsession with truth and an idea of trying to figure out whether this stuff actually happened or didn't, because the suggestions and some of the evidence is extraordinarily troubling regardless of what anyone is able to pull forward in an impeachment proceeding.
You mentioned Nixon's tapes and frankly, the dress with President Clinton. Do you think whatever we learn from this whistleblower, the Senate has voted to release this report, that could be in that same category?
Well, I think the thing that we have in this inquiry, is we have Bob Mueller, who's a credible speaker, who's put together a bunch of evidence and did a massive report. And we have not yet released a whistleblower who, again, we don't know who they are. But we do know something about them. They're a member of the national security apparatus. Their complaint, whatever it says, we don't know what it's, but it was reviewed by the inspector general, who was appointed by Donald Trump and is responsible for these kinds of things. I looked up on the website sort of what they say for an urgent threat, and the DOJ whistleblower hotline says it needs to be some serious or flagrant abuse or violation of law. And so that's what the inspector general found. We don't know what it was, but these are very, very serious allegations that should be taken seriously. I think there is a risk that people become desensitized to the amount of evidence, or they become fixated on the absence of a tape or the absence of a dress. But these are credible people within government saying extraordinarily serious things, and obviously we'll have to see where the investigation leads.
You mentioned the fact, there are these six committees that are looking into various aspects of the Trump administration's behavior. Does calling this an impeachment inquiry, does that give them more tools to get people to testify, to get documents that the White House has been withholding?
It might, but I think the same problem obtains, which is with only 405 days till Election Day, I think the prospect of looking for judges for relief, or looking to the Senate for a conviction and removal from office as relief, ultimately probably not much. I think the main thing that this does is something about fact-finding and truth-finding, and something about building the case or investigating the realities surrounding this president. I think, there's really no question, I think, at this point that this is a terrible event for the United States, the idea of having an impeachment inquiry. It's a distraction. It's ugly. It prompts cynicism. But I think there's a sense among some folks that that's what this president has done to America, both with the Mueller report and with the impeachment inquiry. There have been at least the appearances of impropriety that have produced massive amounts of distraction and ugliness and cynicism. And I think, like I said, I think the Congress is not ultimately probably going to be the agent or institution that rises above that kind of fog of cynicism. I think the American people are going to have to do it in some sense on their own.
So you're saying that, and this is obviously looking into your crystal ball, saying the House will probably not vote for impeachment, and it'll be up to voters to decide whether the president should stay or go.
I think that's close, but I think the thing I would really say is right now is so early. That no one can tell. No one could have told Gilling to Watergate what one would find. It's possible that all kinds of things might be true. I think the next big step is the whistleblower complaint. Who thought that person, he or she, thought they saw something something urgent, and they said something, and the inspector general believed it. I don't know what that was, but I think the it's unclear how far it will go. But I think even aside from the possibility, even if there were articles of impeachment, even if the House voted, nobody's removing anybody from office. I think that's the thing to bear in mind from start to finish.
Right.
And I think that in that sense, this is all in the aid of American democracy. And that's why I say I think in the end, the ultimate decision for the history books and for the reality of the American political system and for our standing in the world, it's going to be up to the American voters in the end. They will see some set of things, but it's not going to be the House that saves us.
Let me read a couple of emails. One from Greg, who says, to this point, the administration has done a pretty good job throwing roadblocks in front of many House investigations. And he mentions Corey Lewandowski, William Barr. What is the difference now? And I think you just answered that. An email from Fred. Is there an actual law that prohibits the president from seeking aid from a foreign power? Not financial aid, but I guess aid and support.
Anything of value is the term of the statute, and it's soliciting or accepting or receiving. That's federal election law. Now, the thing we haven't talked about that much is this possibility of using the money, some hundreds of millions of dollars, which Trump personally suspended nearly a week before the call. So when he's referring to, oh, we've been very, very good to you and sort of this sort of thing, it's definitely in the context of that. Of course, the Washington Post is also reporting today that a number of national security officials did not want Trump to have a phone call like this because he might talk about Joe Biden's son. And now they're concerned, again, I say, not about federal election laws. They're worried about foreign international security. And this is horribly damaging set of allegations. So for the one instance, it's federal election law. For the other, it really is something constitutional about the president's abuse of public trust. And that's exactly the kind of things that have prompted impeachment articles in the past. And I think that's much more serious here.
Almost up on a break here, but what do you make of the role that Rudolph Giuliani has been playing? He is President Trump's personal lawyer. He has been talking to Ukrainians about Vice President Joe Biden and his son.
Yes, and I think he and the president both started tweeting about Joe Biden's son in March of this year. And I think on the one hand, I think, this is a terrible example of change the subject distraction. Well, these are false, unsubstantiated, nonsensical claims. But on the other hand, actually, Rudy Giuliani had an amazing interview last night with Laura Ingraham. And I think the obsession with Joe Biden's son actually, perversely, gives credence to the theory that actually Giuliani and Trump would take action, improper action, in order to smear Joe Biden. If they're so obsessed with these issues today, I think maybe that is what was going on in the phone call with Ukrainian president and actually could very well have led them to manipulate funds, again, depending on where the facts end up showing through the inquiry.
Let's take that short break. We'll get back to our conversation with Craig Green. He's a professor of law at Temple University's School of Law here in Philadelphia, talking about some of the legal and constitutional issues at stake based on all the news that we've been digesting. Also, some of the challenges faced by the president, the whistleblower, and Congress. 1-888-477-9499. Much more after this short break. We'll be right back. This is Radio
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowen, and just to recap what we've been talking about yesterday, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi opened a formal impeachment inquiry into President Trump. She said his pressure on the Ukrainian president to investigate Joe Biden and his son are a betrayal of the integrity of our elections. The whistleblower who claimed Trump pressured the Ukrainian president has said that he or she wants to testify before the House Intelligence Committee. The Senate voted unanimously yesterday to release the whistleblower's report that's being held up by the administration. And again, Craig Green from Temple University Law School is our guest to talk about all of this. And you can join us. Again, that phone number is 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And as Craig has said several times, and I hope it is apparent from this conversation, that these are very serious and even perilous times that we are living through. Let me play an interview that President Trump did with ABC's George Stephanopoulos. This was earlier this year.
If somebody called from a country, Norway, we have information on your opponent. Oh. I think I'd want to hear it.
You want that kind of interference in our elections?
It's not an interference. They have information. I think I'd take it. If I thought there was something wrong, I'd go maybe to the FBI if I thought there was something wrong. But when somebody comes up with OPPO research, right, they come up with OPPO research. Oh, let's call the FBI. The FBI doesn't have enough agents to take care of it. But you go and talk honestly to congressmen. They all do it. They always have. And that's the way it is. It's called OPPO research.
Is this OPPO research, Craigie?
He certainly thinks it is. And I think it illustrates the dissolution of the boundary between private and public. I think he really doesn't understand the difference or doesn't. Those type of comments make people think he doesn't understand the difference between serving his own private interests and serving the public good. There's an earlier quote that someone could mention from July 2016 when he talked about Russia. If you're listening, maybe you'll go search for Hillary's emails. And of course, we now know that actually Russia did exactly that immediately thereafter. And I think that there is a sense, and this I think might be one reason why national security officials, if I were working for the administration, I would be worried about having him get on the phone with Ukraine because he would skip over those types of barriers that exist in order to preserve the integrity of the office and make sure that the president is serving America and not himself. And I think that, you know, that's what I would say. It's not to say that Trump is always doing those things, but there's a distressing pattern. And I think the Stephanopoulos interview and I think the earlier quote as a candidate and I think this kind of behavior, I mean, the recording, the notes from the conversation are just like that. We do lots of good things for you. Won't you please look into Joe Biden's son? Joe Biden's son? How can that possibly be considered a matter of international affairs? You have probably a 3 or 4 minute conversation with the president of Ukraine and interviewing about Joe Biden's son seems like a matter of national interest. It is not. It is a matter of political interest and scheming for the 2020 election, illustrated by Rudy Giuliani's recent and I think almost unhinged interviews that he's done on the subject. Mm-hmm. A real obsession with just political grandstanding. And that's just it's appropriate. Of course, he's going to campaign and that those are things should be debated in public process, but they should not be matters of international diplomacy with the president of Ukraine.
Does a part of impeachment, does it have to prove then quid pro quo? And this is, of course, a question about whether aid money was used to pressure the president of Ukraine or not. We do not know, as you mentioned, the answer to that. But does it have to be, you know, in sort of no uncertain terms, quid pro quo? Or are there sort of ways that you can say it without saying it?
Sure. So, of course, it doesn't have to be a quid pro quo, and of course it doesn't have to be explicit. If it were a criminal prosecution, it wouldn't have to be explicit. Impeachment is a much more political and fluid type of environment. I think abuses of the constitutional trust, that is actually something that someone could get impeached for, aside from criminal violations bribery is listed in the Constitution. I don't think it has to reach bribery before it's a high crime and misdemeanor. Past impeachment proceedings do not suggest that. And I think it's very clear. I think there's unanimity that if, for example, it were true, which I'm not saying it is,
right,
but if it were true that President Trump used $420 million of U.S. taxpayer money to try to pressure Ukraine to help his 2020 prospects, that's not OPPO research. That's abuse of public trust. And that's terribly inappropriate conduct, definitely a ground for impeachment if they could ever get the procedural wheels running.
A question from Emily. How is this different from Obama looking into Trump's relationship with Russia in the 2016 campaign? The Obama administration did do that, as did members of the various intelligence communities looking into what was going on in 2016.
Sure. And I think that for their investigations are one thing and influence is another. So I don't think there's any allegation that President Obama or anyone else was trying to manipulate Russia, for example, to disclose Donald Trump's emails, nor were they talking to Russia to see whether they could cook up some sort of prosecution against Donald Trump's family. I think there actually isn't any similarity. Now, one of the things about it is there is a conflict of interest maybe with Hunter Biden. Maybe it wasn't the best business decision. Of course, there are allegations of conflicts of interest with respect to Trump's children today. Those are the kinds of things that should be, again, investigated in the public arena. There's nothing inappropriate about criticizing Joe Biden or his son or anybody
sure.
else.
Sure.
But the idea that one would bring foreign nations to bear and try to encourage or influence prosecutorial officials in Ukraine. I mean, change the name. He says Norway, but what about China? What about Russia? You know, this is the type of thing that makes American democracy up for sale in some political sense. And I think it damages American democracy. Can I also say it also damages American foreign policy? Because how much credibility can a president have when his electoral prospects this day today depend on what Ukraine says about that phone call? If Ukraine, right or wrong, true or false, if Ukraine were to say that, yes, it went down the way his worst critics say it went down, Donald Trump would be vulnerable. How strong can he be in the world stage when he is susceptible to these kinds of attacks? I think it weakens American democracy at home, and it weakens American diplomacy abroad.
Do you think we're in a different political and even cultural partisan environment today than we were under Nixon or under Clinton? I mean, I remember both those times, and it seems we were at each other's throats in the 90s and also in the 70s.
I think that's right. I think the thing that I experience anyway, and I think there's a threat to truth that feels a little different. I think it's not grown. Maybe it grows out of the internet or social media, but it could grow just as easily out of a really hard-fought 50-50 country, at least since 2000, at least since Bush v. Gore. There's been a lot of 50, and every side has their own righteous indignation about the wrongs that were done to them by the other side. And that's what I would, if I could write the script for what happens in the impeachment inquiry, I would love for facts to come forward, whether they're true or false, whether they support or disclaim. Optimally, they exonerate the president. That's what I'd like to have happen. But, you know, if indeed they show whatever they show, the idea that somebody would be able to find credible facts that people could believe what happened one way or the other. And I think that would be the best thing, I think, for restoring American democracy and for some idea of restoring American government.
Do you think that's possible?
You know, I think that for me, it's always one story. It's always in the hands of the American people. I think there's nobody who can make America do the right things. And I think there's no one who can force America to do the wrong ones. So I think there are people, of course, in various political outlets and media outlets and all kinds of places around the world, it turns out, who have interest in what happens to American democracy. But in the end, the nice thing about the Constitution is every 2 years there's an election. And every 2 years, the American people get a chance in their own way with the Electoral College and the rest to go forward and be heard. And I think this is a transformative election in 2020. I think the decision to accept Donald Trump with all his warts and his scandals and whatever else will be one decision. And the decision to reject him would be a different one. And I just can't think of it another way than just whatever happens with impeachment or whatever happens in the courtroom or whatever happens anywhere, all that is only generating information and politics and culture for the American people to go vote in 405 days.
As you mentioned, both Nixon and Clinton, Nixon, of course, left office before he was impeached. Clinton was impeached, but this was after they both had won re-election. So it's a different political environment that way as well.
That's right. And for Nixon, one other thing to mention to your point is, you know, Nixon was bipartisan. I think there was a sense of the partisan lines were less clearly drawn. I think for Clinton, the lines were already pretty sharp, but not as sharp as today. I think today is the sharpest, for whatever that's worth.
Let me read some more comments. And again, you can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, talking about the news of the last couple of days and the fact that yesterday House Speaker Nancy Pelosi opened a formal impeachment inquiry into President Trump, essentially saying his pressure on the Ukrainian president to investigate Joe Biden and Joe Biden's son are a, quote, betrayal of the integrity of our elections. Chris says, can Trump be disqualified from running again in 2020? Is this anywhere in our nation's laws?
No, I don't think so. Probably not.
I mean, anyone can run for president.
That's right.
Right?
I mean, and we, you know, there isn't time and there isn't impetus for, there's no criminal proceeding we're talking about. I think that the process for doing anything like that would be impeachment. Even that wouldn't really keep him from running again formally. I think it's all of those sorts of technical legal avenues, I think, are way too slow and probably ineffective, even if we had more time.
Both Irene and Steve have a question and a comment that are related. Irene asks, why are you so sure the Senate won't convict? A comment from Steve, I don't think it's fair to say the Senate votes for conviction aren't there. They aren't there yet, but that doesn't mean they won't be there eventually.
His name is Mitch McConnell, and he's been there for a long time, and it takes two-thirds. So aside from that, it's just very hard for me to get optimistic about that.
Just because of his past, his meaning Mitch McConnell's past performance?
Mitch McConnell has been extraordinary. generally successful in blocking much lesser attacks. I would say another thing to bear in mind is the Republican Party, I think at this point, doesn't really exist outside of Donald Trump. I think the discipline for the party has been very effective. Even people like Mitt Romney can barely speak at the margins. And so I think there's enormous party discipline. They have a lot of Republicans have a lot of votes in the Senate, and they would have to lose a phenomenal. So I shouldn't say, of course, facts could unfold that would be so devastating, et cetera. But I just don't see that in the prospect. Like, I hope it's not true. I say again, like, I hope that the worst things that could have happened haven't happened. But barring some sort of enormous sort of uncovering of events that it's very hard to even today, on this day, with all the news there is and all the troubling scenarios, it's hard to find anything that would persuade Mitch McConnell to even bring such a thing to the floor.
This is such a speculative question, and of course we don't know what is in the whistleblower's report, but the IG said this was of urgent concern. Assuming that that gets released, I mentioned this earlier, but assuming that gets released, do you think that could be, if it's as urgent an alarm as the IG thinks, that could sort of pull people around?
I mean, I think that
the truth, as you'd call it?
That would be, I think, first of all, of course, I say again, it would be discouraging because it would show a really bad thing about American democracy. But if it were to be true and people were to believe it, I think that would be, in some sense, a really vindicating moment for truth-telling in American democracy. On the other hand, you know, Bob Mueller was just here a couple months ago, you know, so I think that it's hard to, again, be very excited about that as a prospect or sort of hopeful about that as a persuasive vehicle, given the forces arrayed against, you know, including, of course, Rudy Giuliani on all news networks and a variety of other very established Republican politicians who have hooked their wagon to Donald J. Trump in 2020 and have no other where to go. It's not going to be, you know, Weld for them or some other Republican candidate. The future of the Republican Party in the immediate term hinges on success in 2020, and everybody knows it.
One of the arguments I've heard about the Mueller report and why it didn't have the effect that I think its supporters were hoping it was going to have was that it was complicated. I think the attorney general did his job to kind of muddy the waters as well. But that this is a little sort of cleaner, a little easier for the public to understand as we understand it today. And then it's about a future election, something that's going to happen next year in 2020.
So I think you're absolutely right about that. I think in the end, I think all of your listeners should just imagine what it is that prompted this whistleblower who works in the national security establishment one day to wake up and say, I need to complain about the president. And then the inspector general reads that complaint and says credible and says urgent and forwards it along to the director of national intelligence. You know, today and probably not tomorrow, maybe tomorrow, somebody will find out what that says. And it is obviously possible, and I should stress that, I think you're right to obviously, it is possible that the evidence collected in that complaint and found urgent and credible by the inspector general would be so compelling that it amounts to sort of deleted tapes and blue dresses. You know, maybe that's true. It just would be so speculative, it seems to me. It's right. So hard for me to imagine who would be in a position to put all those pieces together. It's very easy for me to imagine that that's a serious person making serious allegations that the American people should take seriously. That's very easy for me to imagine even today. But I think in order to sort of, as some of the listeners are thinking about sort of Senate conviction or, you know, you might as well think about Donald Trump resigning from office like Richard Nixon. Sure, it could happen, but it's so hard to imagine given the context we're in on this fine Wednesday.
Well, here's another question that sort of falls into that category. What are the actual odds of criminal charges would come against Trump's cabinet members and other people involved in this obstruction of justice?
Obviously possible. I mean, you know, it is an interesting fact that although the president is not indictable, he's the only one who's not indictable. And so it is legally possible to imagine other people having been indicted. You know, Bob Mueller could have invested other people more than he actually did. But I think in the time frame that we're thinking about being realistic about 405 days and thinking about all the things that are going to happen on Thursday and Friday and Saturday and Sunday, and the idea that there would be enough focus and attention to move forward a criminal prosecution under Barr as attorney general, I think is also it's obviously possible. So I want to give it full credit, but it really seems remote, I think, as a possibility.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there. Craig Green, as always, thank you for coming in and joining us on Radio Times.
Thank you very much.
Especially talking about these important legal, constitutional issues. And again, he's a professor of law at Temple University's Beasley School of Law. We began our conversation with Louis Jacobson. He's a PolitiFact's senior correspondent. Go to WHYY.org/Radio Times to find out more about the program. You can download a podcast of the show. You can find us on Facebook and you can follow us on Twitter. Diana Martinez is the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times. The show is produced by Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Kelsey Hansen. I'm Marty Moscowane. Thank you so much for joining us.